Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. It is Hard Knock Radio. On the phone line with us out of Atlanta, Georgia, Kalonji Chenga, founder of the FTP movement, among other things. Definitely his feet are in the trench, a freedom fighter for real, and somebody who is not going to let this day pass him in terms of remembering the tragedy that took place a year ago in Georgia when Troy Davis was put to death in spite of massive demonstrations all over the world calling for him to be reprieved and looking at all sorts of evidence that pointed to his innocence, including the recanting of statements from witnesses. But we wanted to mark this day by looking back and seeing where we've gone since the Troy Davis movement. And so, Kalonji, welcome to the show. What's going through your mind today?
Hey, man, first of all, you know, definitely an honor to be on the show. What's going on going through my mind is basically, you know, it's the same old two-step. You know, Dr. King said our people had an eight-day memory when it comes to tragedies and things of that nature. And I think that it's pretty much been proven with all the different assaults that have been launched on us since the Troy Davis case. You know, you had things like the Trayvon Martin issue and so many other incidents throughout the United States where Troy's name has almost been swept under the rug and like a memory of the past. But it's been a one-year extended battle, shall we say, you know, because as you know, since Troy's passing, his sister, the courageous freedom fighter, Martina Correa, had passed as well. So, you know, we're definitely not going to just sit back and allow his name or his family's name to be, you know, lost in, you know, in the halls of history.
The death penalty is something that's been a source of what's the word? It's been a thorn in the side, especially with the black community, because it's been applied in such a disproportionate manner. Have you seen a lot of fights and a lot of movements to try and once and for all upend that policy? I know we have a proposition in California, you know, that will push that back. But what about Georgia and some of the other places from your estimation?
Well, I think that, you know, you have a number of groups who have been fighting for years to abolish the death penalty from all different angles. You know, here in Georgia, you have a few different organizations that specialize in it. The GFADP, which is Georgians for Alternatives Against the Death Penalty, and folks like Amnesty International, of course. But I want to point out that when we're dealing with the whole death penalty as a whole, I think that oftentimes, you know, folks try to make it look like it should be a choice, you know, whether it's just or whether it's unjust. You know, we know that for the most part, the people who are being executed look like us. And the death penalty situation just doesn't affect one individual. You know, for instance, the Troy Davis family, the entire family was devastated last year. You're talking about his mother transitioning in the beginning of last year, then him and, you know, him being executed, and, of course, his sister Martina. Look at the effect that it left on the family. It wiped out an entire family, you know. So the fight for the death penalty is definitely a just fight. Now, we get some folks that say, okay, boom, you know, what about the people that have done it? You know, we don't know who did what in this country because of the fact that, you know, this whole country was based off of executions. You understand what I'm saying? The formation of this country, you know, and it thrives off of execution, whether it's here in the United States or whether it's, you know, thousands of miles overseas, whether it's in Iraq or wherever, you know. So, you know, we say more than just abolishing the death penalty, we need to abolish capitalism and imperialism as a whole.
I hear that. You know, I want to go back to Troy Davis's family for just a minute before we look at this from a larger perspective or a more systemic one. You were close friends with the family. You know, Martina, you got a chance to really know them from your work. And then, as you said, offline, that, you know, that led to, you know, having a real tight connection with them. What was the family like? What was his sister like? What have we lost in their deaths?
Well, the family, you know, was a great model, still is a great model of what a black family would or should be. That's one family that I witnessed stick together, and I witnessed a whole lot of strength from, Troy's mother, Miss Virginia Davis, and Martina, his sister Kimberly, Martina's son Dejan, and the cousins, uncles, the whole thing. It was that true down-home family. Whenever I would go to Savannah, you know, they would have their fish fries, and it's just always one big happy family gathering. And I watched, you know, I got involved in the case before it was a popular case, before many of the shining knights came in on their horses. And it was before that first execution attempt. And I saw and I heard from Martina's own mouth how many of these organizations wouldn't touch the case at all. So it amazes me to see some of them, you know, act as if they have the keys to his legacy, more or less. The family, as I stated, was definitely a beautiful family and still is. I miss them dearly. I had the unfortunate honor of being a pallbearer in his sister Martina's funeral. And to this day, whenever I think of Martina and Troy as well, it's like it's really heartbreaking because of the fact that, I would talk to Martina and it wouldn't just be, okay, we're just talking about Troy and the death penalty, so on and so forth. We would crack jokes and like everyday people. And I really love that about her and the entire family because, it just wasn't about, just free my brother or free my son. It was about, let's get justice. You know what I'm saying? And I never heard them speak bad about the McPhail family. I just wanted to point that out.
For people who don't know, who's the McPhail family?
Okay, the officer McPhail who Troy was accused of murdering, the McPhail family from the gate, the first time, I forget his first name, you got to forgive me for that, but from the first time I ever heard anything on the news and seeing them in person, it was always like, there was no search for justice. They felt that they had justice because of the fact that they had a black male who they felt deserved to die because it wasn't about justice, in my opinion. It looked more like it was about revenge. You understand what I'm saying? Somebody has to die. You understand what I'm saying? Forget how many witnesses recanted their statement. Forget how many millions of signatures were signed. It was like someone had to die. And I want to point out that our organization, we had the opportunity to go canvass in Savannah. We had the opportunity to go out there and petition. And we witnessed blatant racism right there in that city. I've never in my life been called, for lack of better words, the N-word to my face, and it took everything in me, to not react to that because of the fact that, I'm from up north and, it just doesn't go like that.
Wait, for real it was like that? It was on that level?
Brother, I'm talking about, one example, one of the white gentlemen told my wife when she was passing out a piece that I hope they fry the end. Another one told me that niggers, N-I-G-G-R-A-H, niggers, is always complaining. We freed the slaves, you always complaining about something. Said that to me, to my face, and I have to admit, that was probably one of the most trying times of my patience as a man. Right. So this is the type of things we witnessed. We had, there was brothers and sisters down there who would tell us, man, we grew up with Troy, da 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 da, and I knew him, and so on and so forth. Okay, well, won't you sign a petition? I can't do that, my job, blah, blah, blah. I talked to a black police officer down there. And for the record, I don't talk to the police. But I when we was out there doing the signatures, tried to get him to sign because, you know, we were going for broke on it. And this guy said, you know, I know his whole family. You know, we grew up in the same neighborhood, so on and so forth. I said, okay, cool. Well, you know, you're going to sign a petition? And I can't do that, man. You know, da-da-da. Well, you know, they're trying to kill him. Yeah, you know, I'm going to pray for him. You understand what I'm saying?
Right. It is.
I felt like I went back in time. You understand what I'm saying? Imagining what the 60s or the 50s might have been like. You know?
Wow.
So that's the type of atmosphere that led up to his execution. It was a frame up, and it was a railroading. And from the gate, I think in the hearts and minds of many of the everyday citizens, you know, they felt that it was going to go down. Many of us, being naive, we thought that with the millions of signatures and petitions and the call-ins and the campaigns and all of that, and not only that, the former presidents and the former heads of the FBI and all that type of stuff, the Pope, we felt that there may have been a chance that they wouldn't execute him. But unfortunately, you know, Troy went out like a martyr. And, you know, we look at him as a symbol. You know, I was speaking to someone yesterday, and they said, you know, man, we lost that fight. And I disagree about saying that we lost the fight. I think that we actually won the fight. You know, unfortunately, there's always going to be casualties in war. And I think that we won because of the fact that we proved to the world that America is still the racist criminal institution that it's always been, and they have no regards for human life. And in fact, I will go a step further. They would have more regards for a animal, a dog, like in the Michael Vick case, than they would an actual human being.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Kalonji Chenga out of Atlanta as we look back on the tragic case around Troy Davis. A year ago today, he was executed. One of the ironies around this execution was that there was an opportunity for him to be stayed. And on the Georgia Pardon Board, which can issue that, the head of it was a black man, and there was another person, second in charge, also an African American. And of course, when it went to the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas was the one that pulled the trigger. What is this about? You know, we fought for so long to get black faces into these positions, because we felt that there was bias, but in many ways, people have come to the conclusion that they're carrying out the same policies. How did we get to that point?
Well, I mean, we've been there. I mean, if we look back at the overseers when we had the slave situation, you know, it goes all the way back to that psychology. You know, many of our so-called brothers and sisters, they feel that, you know, they have something to prove. I'm not you know, it's not about being black anymore. And I hear that all the time, and it sickens me to my stomach. It really amazes me that you can be a black person in America and that you can utter that out of your mouth. You know, that to me, that's ancestral treason in the highest form. But you have folks like Clarence Thomas who has a history. You have the two clowns that were on the Georgia board who didn't stand up for it, man. It's amazing. It's not about justice. You know, we have our people here in America, you know, whether it's, you know, your president or whoever, they go out the way to prove that, you know, it's not about black and white anymore. We've overcame. You understand what I'm saying? And that's the biggest crock that can be delivered. And we need to hold them accountable for that because of the fact that...
Was there pushback on them afterwards? And I'm asking this in the sense of understanding that there's been this historic prison strike in Georgia, which would definitely come under their purview. So, you know, what's been the reaction to them with the situation with Troy, and then just seeing that they have their hands in the prison, and we've seen these hunger strikes go on that have, you know, are they just, you know, the business as usual? Are they getting slaps on the back? Are they strongly aligned in the community?
No. I think that part of the problem is we have, there are so many issues and there's so many forces pulling in different directions that, to be quite honest, it's difficult to even organize the organizations. You know what I'm saying? You have so much, so many of our people are trained to go for whatever the flavor of the month is. The average person here in the city of Atlanta and the state of Georgia don't even know there's a Georgia prison strike going on. That's just a reality. You know, that's coming from the average person you talk to. They know nothing about any of that type of stuff. You know, our people are more focused on what is in the news, what's the hype of the day, what's the flavor of the month. This month is Troy Davis, next month is Trayvon Martin, then we'll see Oscar Grant, then we'll talk about Sean Bell, you know, whatever the flavor of the month is. You know, and, you know, in regards to being any backlash or holding anyone accountable, you know, to be honest with you, organizers within the grassroots community don't even hold each other accountable for actions and lack of action. So how can you hold anyone else accountable outside of the so-called conscious community?
That's real. Not holding each other accountable. You all have activities that you're doing today. What are those in memory of Troy Davis?
Okay, we will have, there's a rally, and we have a rally at 7 p.m. over at the what we call Troy Davis Park, which is Woodruff Park, downtown Atlanta. We have a rally and drum circle, and it's a memorial not only for Troy, but again for Ms. Virginia Davis and also for Sister Martina, because of the fact that we overlook their role in this fight. You understand what I'm saying? We overlook their role in this fight. We overlook Miss Virginia Davis, the you know, being at all the protests and going out herself, petitioning and speaking, you know, and we overlook Martina, who was a cancer victim, who suffered from you know, had a 11-year breast cancer run, and you know, so we want to honor them as well. So we have that rally and drum circle at 7 p.m. at Woodruff Park in Atlanta, and at 9 p.m. we have a we've joined forces for a piece called a National Day of Action Against Mass Incarceration, which a Georgia for Prison Abolition group will be holding a march against the mass incarceration, and that will take place at the park, and it will lead us to the Martin Luther King Center here on Auburn Avenue.
Kalonji, we appreciate you taking time out to talk with us. I mean, the obvious questions that I think in everybody's mind is your thoughts on not hearing Barack Obama at least talk or mention or shout out or say anything about the Troy Davis situation. And, you know, as we speak this week, we are, you know, having the Congressional Black Caucus gathering. And do you think that Troy Davis's case will resonate with those attendees in Washington, D.C.? And when I mean resonate, will it be remembered in the form of commitments to take action to turn the tide around?
I doubt very highly that they even remember Troy Davis's name. I think that the Black Caucus and Obama will catch a case of convenient amnesia. You understand what I'm saying? Because of the fact that they feel that it's done and it's the past and we need to get over it, just like slavery, just like reparations and all that other stuff. Just like Trayvon Martin, all of that, like I said, is flavor of the month. We saw politicians walking around with hoods on and we haven't heard a peep from them since. So I doubt very highly if they did, you know, if they even mentioned Troy Davis's name, it would be a strange day in Washington, D.C.
Well, there you have it. Just so people remember, the name of the two brothers that were on the pardoning board is Albert Murray is one. He's the chairman. And the other one, I believe, is James Mills.
Right.
You know, and neither one of them really stepped up. Not James Mills, but James Donald.
Right.
And you know, they didn't step up to really stop the tide for that situation. And of course, you know, we have the prison strike where there's all this abuse that's going on in the prisons in Georgia, and we don't really hear them stepping up. So it means there's a lot of work to be done, but I think it also means that people are going to have to gather around like-minded people who share values versus surrounding ourselves with people who may look like us, because not every brother's a brother, as Chuck D famously said.
Yeah, Malcolm X actually said, you don't call a man brother till he operates like one. And I think that's where we get confused. In the words of Imam Jamil Al-Amin, formerly H-Rap Brown, he said to be black is necessary, but it's not sufficient. You understand what I'm saying? We are so caught up in thinking that we, as far as black people, are going to save ourselves when many of us don't even want to be black. Many of us want to be exaggerated Americans, you know, when in fact, if they respected you as being American, they wouldn't call you African-American. You understand what I'm saying? You just be American. So out the gate, you know, it's a disservice for you to think that, you know, we're just going to fight on the grounds of we all look alike. You know, that's not going to work here.
That's real talk. Kalonji, we appreciate this, taking time out, and our condolences to the family and friends of Troy Davis as we look back on that 1 year, anniversary, so to speak. And hopefully we're inspired to do more and do right by the sacrifices they made. We're going to take a break here. We'll be right back.